What is the monkey doing?
And we used to be best friends.
57 verses 13 through 23. Our Savior says,
thank you.
Thank you so much for tuning in. My name's Galvax Lindor. And as you know, that song is Thank You by Daisy, the musical twin who we sadly lost last week to the entity. But lucky for us, His Highness himself, protector of the seven lands, has written and performed a song in tribute to our favorite twin, now gone.
Even though we lost another twin to the entity again, there's no reason why we should cry. The butterfly was once the caterpillar, and I'm sure in some other realm the twin is born again. The entity's our friend. No need to fight the entity. The entity's our friend.
Whoa. Oh, sorry about that, y'all. I, like so many other podcasts out there, have been getting dimensional overlaps ever since they discovered that sun worm gnawing on the interior core of our sun. Hopefully this will clear up and the tremors will stop. I know a lot of you have been permanently frozen into crystals. And if you're one of those folks lucky enough to be frozen in time while listening to the greatest podcast there ever was, then I congratulate you for your good judgment. And lucky for you, the podcast that you're going to be listening to forever is a glorious conversation with my former co-host, comedian Natasha Leggero. We're going to jump right into that, but first, this. A big, tremendous thank you to the darlings at Athletic Greens for sponsoring this episode of the DTFH. My dear listeners, if you're like me, then you've probably attempted to go on one of those vitamin kicks because you saw your healthy friends with their Ziploc bags filled with thousands of different vitamins and their big, embarrassing barrels of protein powder on top of their refrigerators with old dried up splattered bits of peanut butter all over the sides. And you thought, you know what, maybe I'll give it a shot. And then within a few days, you realize this can't be my life. I can't spend all day long shoveling various vitamins into my mouth. It's just not the way I'm going to be, which is why you're going to love Athletic Greens. It's great for simplifying. Endless pills, multivitamins, multiminerals, probiotics, prebiotics, and all the other schmegma that those vitamin-popping freaks out there consider to be a necessary part of their daily health regimen. With Athletic Greens, one tasty scoop contains 75 vitamins, minerals, and whole food sourced ingredients, including a multivitamin, multimineral, probiotic, a green superfood blend, and more. And it all works together to fill that gaping nutritional gap in your diet. It increases energy and focus, and it aids with digestion and supports a healthy immune system, all without the need to take multiple products. Plus, they send it to you in this beautiful container that will make you seem like a sophisticated health person. I love it. It tastes good and it makes me feel good. Also, they will send you vitamin D, a free 1-year supply of vitamin D with your first purchase if you visit my link today. You'll basically never have to buy vitamin D again unless you're supplying vitamin D to your bunker of wives or husbands or whatever is going on over there in your prepper mountain. Start 2021 with a simple, sustainable nutritional habit. That's what Athletic Greens is all about. So whether you're looking for peak for performance or better health, covering your bases with Athletic Greens makes investing in your energy, immunity, and gut health each day simple, tasty, and efficient. I wouldn't lead you astray here, friends. This is the answer to my vitamin hell, Athletic Greens. It's the hand of God pulling you out of that dark, bubbling inferno of boiling vitamins into the great, wonderful celestial realm of a delicious, powerful, healthy powder. Simply visit athleticgreens.com/Duncan and join health experts, athletes, and health conscious go-getters around the world who make a daily commitment to their health every day. And again, you just visit athleticgreens.com/Duncan and get your free year supply of wonderful vitamin D and 5 free travel packs today. Thank you, Athletic Greens. Oh, what a week it's been, my sweet friends. And this conversation with my friend Natasha came at exactly the right time. I'm sure many of you listening are fans of Natasha, but in case somehow you have missed the great, brilliant phenomena that is Natasha Leggero, you should know she's been podcasting for as long as I have, and she's really good at it. She knows how to get real, and sometimes I forget how important that is, you know, especially when it's getting real about like feeling depressed, which is something that happens to me from time to time. In fact, it happens to me every fucking winter. And I don't know that you would call it like a clinical depression, because I've had that. And that's, you know, like suddenly your bed turns into a gravity well that is inescapable. And you just lay in bed and sort of freak out and slowly like just like sink into increasing levels of entropic, non-restful slumber with suicidal ideations springing out of your sapped, slow-moving brain. That I wouldn't wish on anybody. And it's a really scary thing, but there's other forms of it, you know? There's just sort of situational depressions, the blues, just I think we're all feeling, or a lot of us are probably naturally feeling a kind of gloomy sort of as, you know, we get all the weird news about the fucking COVID variants and all this stuff, and we're all kind of stuck indoors, and, you know, it's just a stressful time. So maybe like the worst thing you could do right now is, if you're not feeling great, you know, like get out there to the world that somehow you're doing amazing because you've learned how to crochet or something, when really your subjective universe feels like some kind of distant cratered ice moon orbiting an even more cratered ice moon in some distant part of our solar system. You know, that doesn't help anybody. And I think that, you know, without getting, you know, commercially confessional, it's a good thing to let people know if you're starting to feel the fungal creep of depression, because I have noticed from my own experience with it that it never wants me to say it's happening. It always wants you to keep it secret and not say anything and ignore it. And by the way, not to be maybe the worst influence of all time, in my experience, from time to time, ignoring it, actually, I'm so sorry to say this, has worked. Because sometimes it just goes away. It lifts the whatever it was. It was just some momentary, you know, combination of a lot of bad decisions, drinking too much, getting dehydrated, not exercising, sleeping too late, looking at too much porn, whatever. And then like you just get kind of gummed down and sapped. But the frightening thing is that sometimes if you ignore it and don't let people know you're feeling weird, it can amplify. And it gets worse and worse. I don't know what this thing is. I'm not going to go on and on in some obvious mental health rant here. But I will never understand why in our bizarre culture, being open about the fact that from time to time, your neurotransmitters aren't exactly firing on all cylinders is somehow considered like weird compared to, you know, somebody will go around like getting people to sign their cast. But if you're feeling weird or depressed or paranoid or anxious, or you're having insomnia, or you know what I mean, you're getting anxiety attacks, people just keep that to themselves. I guess we all want everyone around us to think we're some kind of impenetrable citadel of perfect mental health, but who the fuck am I fooling? I was huffing butane in high school. I've been doing acid since I was 16. I can't necessarily expect this old 46-year-old bowl of pudding up here, a very large and powerful bowl of pudding that many scientists have asked to study, and I get calls from some of the nation's top rocket scientists 3 or 4 times a week asking for me to look over their equations, but I'm a little too busy right now with my family. But that being said, come on, why wouldn't I have some stutters and limps and swirling rainbow wheels up there? You know, it would be weird if I didn't. So, but anyway, this conversation with Natasha made me feel better, because it always feels better when people are honest about what's really going on with them, especially when maybe you haven't been that honest about it. And it's not like I've been hiding it or anything. It just creeps up on you sometimes. I was gloating. I was gleefully yapping with my friend Shane about how, yep, this winter I didn't get it. I didn't even get depressed this winter. And then suddenly I'm looking at myself in the mirror. I haven't combed my hair in a day or two. I smell like somebody rolled me around in a giant tin of Vienna sausages, you know? And then it's like, fuck, it happened. But I'm fine. I'm back. I'm on my anti-depression regimen at the moment, which is no booze, waking up early, exercise, and by early, like 5 a.m. I'm trying to go for 4 a.m., going to bed early, all the things that, like, if you're feeling depressed, you're not going to do. Your depression will say to you, like, you know what you should do? You should stay up till 5 a.m. looking at YouTube videos on serial killers. Yeah. No, there's nothing wrong with getting up at 3 a.m. and going downstairs to have another glass of wine. Does that seem weird? Why would it seem weird? Enjoy your life. I mean, you will have to get up at 7, but you could have just have 70 cups of coffee, you know? So I just do the opposite of what that dark, whispering voice tells me to do. And it usually works. And then also, I'm sorry, am I doing some PSA? I'm sorry if I'm doing a PSA. But then also, because I just know I've got depressed brothers and sisters out there. It's good for us to check in with each other from time to time, especially right now. And the main thing is just tell someone in your life. Just be like, I'm fucking depressed. I don't feel great. And probably they'll be like, God, yeah, I feel like shit too. And they'll feel great. It'll make them feel better, because you've been going around with some fake smile, acting like everything's awesome, sending them clips of bears attacking people or whatever, you know? So it's probably going to be a relief for them to hear, like, oh, great, I'm not the only one in this global pandemic that feels a little gloomy right now. So it's good to be honest. All right, whatever. What am I? What is this? What am I? Helpline? I don't know. It just feels nice to talk about it. I love you guys. Thanks for giving me the best job of all time. Before I forget, if you're sick of the commercials in this podcast, if you want pure, unfiltered, hardcore, free bass, DTFH, uninterrupted by ads, all you got to do is head over to patreon.com/DTFH. Subscribe. Every week we gather together for our Journey into Boredom. That's our meditation group. Meets every Monday. We sit for 20 minutes. And every Friday, it's our family gathering. And sometimes we talk about deep philosophical stuff. And sometimes we talk about the eternal question of whether or not squirting is pee. You just never know what's going to happen. But the main thing is you'll get to hang out with the DTFH family a community of powerful magicians, wizards, druids, priests, priestesses, hers and he's and they's, and all in between. A think tank of such profound and epic proportions that more than likely we will tear a rift in the time-space continuum and pluck the Messiah from that beautiful, glowing, spraying womb of glory. And you could be part of that by heading over to patreon.com/DTFH. We're going to jump right into this episode with Natasha. But first this. Eternal praises to the 15 Sisters of Light for today's wonderful sponsor, Feels. Do you have problems sleeping? Are you stressed out? Do you have anxiety attacks? I have problems sleeping. And let me tell you, I've tried everything. At one point, I was like, I'll just get addicted to benzos. Fuck it. I would rather be all pilled up on benzos than exhausted with my brain slowly withering into some kind of chestnut thing. But fortunately for us, we have CBD, and that's what Feels is. Feels, it naturally helps reduce stress, anxiety, pain, and sleeplessness. It's easy to take. You put a few drops of Feels under your tongue and feel the difference within minutes. The thing to remember about CBD is that finding your right dose is important. Everyone's dose is different, so leave room to experiment over the course of a week or so. You may need to take more or less to get the effects you're after. But if you're new to CBD, what's awesome about Feels is they've got real human support. They've got a CBD hotline to help guide your personal experience, maybe help you dial in dosages. You can feel better naturally. Feels works naturally to help you feel better. There's no high hangover or addiction. And I must add, even though it's not on the sheet, other CBD products taste as though a tiny infected clown shit bitter glitter onto your tongue. Feels tastes great because it's high grade CBD. Join the Feels community to get Feels delivered to your door every month. You'll save money on every order and you can pause or cancel at any time. Feels has me feeling my best every day and it can help you too. Become a member today by going to feels.com/Duncan and you'll get 50% off your first order with free shipping. That's feals.com/Duncan to become a member and get 50% automatically taken off your first order with free shipping. Feels.com/Duncan. Okay, pals, I get it. You're ready to go. Let's dive in to this wonderful conversation with my former co-host, Natasha Leggero. We started podcasting together, but obviously she's not just a podcaster. She's an actor. She's a brilliant comedian who, when this horrendous thing finally ends, you must go see live. Sometimes she tours with her brilliant husband, Moshe Kasher. Together, these two create the Endless Honeymoon podcast. They're both so funny, and this podcast is really, really good and has taught me quite a lot. Highly recommend it. All the links you need to find it are going to be at DuncanTrussell.com. And now, my dear friends, welcome back to the DTFH, Natasha Leggero. Natasha, thank you so much for coming on the DTFH again. It's just been too long.
I thought I had to come on since I noticed that you still use the Lavender Hour email for all of your fan mail.
I shouldn't do that. It's weird.
It's okay.
Is that weird?
No. I mean, what am
it's
I going to do with
just
it?
Just all that I have left of those days. You could do whatever you want. You could share it with me if you like.
I'm good.
I just actually recorded a song for someone who invited me to their bachelor party in Maggie Valley. And I was so astounded that I was inspired to sing a song to him explaining why that was not going to be a good thing for either of us to do.
Wait, he wanted you to come to his party?
Yeah, it was a very sweet email. I'm not like, I'm flattered, but also like, and I get it, you know, from his perspective, but then you think about the reality. Like, imagine if I were a little more open. I'm like, yeah, I'll go to your bachelor party. And then I show up and I don't know anybody. I mean, a bachelor party, it's like deep friends getting hammered.
Also,
and then there's me.
There's an infectious disease spreading.
That too.
Like,
yeah, we're dealing with COVID. Well, to make matters worse. So that as well is a daunting problem.
Like, one thing I've noticed about me and my psychology right now is like, I really want to see people I know, but I really, really am repelled by people I don't know.
Yep. Same.
And I don't know.
I mean, it's path work. Is it healthy?
No.
Is that healthy? Do you think that's a healthy way to
Absolutely
be?
Absolutely not.
It's how sick have we all become?
I think I'm pretty sick, and I think there's different levels, and, you know, I think it's really hard to be in a relationship right now because, like, yes, it's also extremely hard to be single, but, like, the amount of time that we're spending with our partners is, like, not normal, and, like, I wouldn't usually be witnessing the things that I'm seeing every day with my partner because, like, some stuff should be done in private. You know, but like now we're like private together.
Yeah.
Like that can't be good for a relationship.
Oh God. I mean, I think as long as you remember that, you're fine. It's when you forget this isn't normal that you know, things can get weird. That's what I do is I have to just keep reminding myself like, well, this isn't normal. You've spent the last year in closer proximity to Aaron than anyone you've ever been with. And just the fact that we have managed to like maintain a marriage to me is it's an accomplishment. And I mean that. I mean, it's a lot of people didn't. A lot of COVID divorces, a lot of COVID breakups.
Yeah, well, what are the options when you have kids?
And well, I mean, you know, I think that tells us just how brutal it has been for some people, because even with kids, they were like, we can't fuck this. This just isn't going to work. I'm going to go off to some place.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds like hell. It sounds like hell to then be in a pandemic, freshly divorced, missing your family, wanting to keep them safe. But it has happened to people. I mean, God, but I know what you mean.
But you no longer have to watch your husband drink chip crumbs in bed.
Right. Right. That's true. You're free of that. But you know, I feel bad. Like, you know, I feel bad for Aaron in that regard. She pointed out this thing a long time ago that I do that I didn't even realize that I did, which is when I take my socks off, I do this lasso thing in the air.
Why?
I don't know. I didn't even notice it was that unconscious. I like lasso my socks.
Wait, every time?
Yeah. Lasso, toss. And then I just toss them away from my body. Just away. And this is this is something I just didn't know, even notice that I did, because I've been doing it so long. And so I'm... And she pointed that out. I mean, what are you doing? Where do your socks go? Well, they land on the floor. And who picks them up usually? Because it's not you. You're just lasso throw. So Forrest is sitting on the couch and we're watching a show. And I watch him reach down, pull his sock off, lasso it, and sling it. Because he sees me do it and it's already infected him. The sock lasso. So, you know, it's nice to know I do this thing unconsciously, but also it's like, I would like for her to imagine that I am some perfect being that doesn't do things like drink crumbs in bed or forget to flush the toilet or all this just visceral stuff, but it's too late.
Let me ask you something. Do you have any interest in stopping doing that? Lassoing your socks? Because it seems like an easy thing. If it kind of annoys her, that seems like an easy one to slowly stop doing. I mean, it is cute. I like the spirit of it. You're kind of like freewheeling.
I'm free. I finally can lasso my sock off my feet. But
like you're free from the restrictions of society and the man and these socks. And I mean, it's sweet, the undertones, but like if it annoys her, that seems like an easy one.
No, you're right. I mean, I agree. But these things that seem easy.
Wait, Duncan, can you stop for a second? Sorry. Yeah. My computer just started talking.
Oh, it did?
Hello? Can you hear me?
I hear you. And you're showing up on this.
Is there any delay with us?
What?
There's no delay?
There shouldn't be a delay.
I think there's like a 1 second
okay.
delay.
You know what? Just to be safe, let me stop this first, what we got so far. All right, we're back. Tech errors, who cares? No way to escape them. I know what you mean, though. I mean, I feel like there's this art to living this closely with someone that I just am not that good at. But because, you know, you have to find that a way to communicate something that's bothering you to someone that doesn't activate their defense mechanisms, you know?
Well,
it's like you don't want to turn into someone's parent.
It's so hard as a woman to not be a nag and to micromanage everything. But I do feel like, especially where children are concerned, women can make better choices.
What do you tell me what you mean? What do you mean by that?
Well, I think that women in general can be more of a nag, you know, and,
yes.
you know, just being very conscious of what you're doing, like something I've learned through therapy, which I feel very lucky that I can do therapy right now, is like every time I ask him to do something, I also like make sure to put like a little barb at the end. Like, could
right.
you put your shoes away because I tripped on them? Or could you feed the dogs because I've done it every day this week? Or, you know what I mean? Like, you don't have to put that second
right.
part on. But it's obviously something you have to be very conscious of. Like, you know, once you become conscious of it, like that you lasso your socks, then maybe.
Which is, I think, the least of the annoying things that I do.
Right. That's actually kind of cute. I like the spirit of it. But yeah.
I've been leaving food out and stuff. I haven't been cleaning up after myself enough, which I'm realizing now, like, I have all these things I look out for, which can mean I'm getting depressed. Mm-hmm. And one of them is I don't clean up after myself. But she's been doing a great job cleaning up after me. So like the signal from my external world has been like, oh, things are good. So that's what I just realized is like, oh shit, that's one of my signals. You know, like that's when it's time to look at my life and figure out what's happening.
Well,
but yeah, I know what you mean.
That's really good that you can see that, because like I'm not someone who's ever been depressed my whole life.
Wow.
You know, I feel very lucky about that. But now I'm like, I think I have some kind of situational depression because I feel like I'm in hospice. I don't really like when it's time to go outside, I don't know how to dress myself. I look at my closet and I'm just like confused. This seems like a cry for help. But like there. And so I imagine people who are already prone to depression, like what they must be feeling like. I don't know. I mean, do you have any advice? Like I've been wearing one earring. Like I looked.
Well,
in the...
I think one of the advantages.
Wait, Duncan, I really think we have like a slight delay. Are you sure you don't mind about that?
Yes, because you know what? I'm recording separately, and on this side it sounds great, but you know what? To be completely safe, let me just stop it. Oh, thank you, Squarespace, for supporting this episode of the DTFH. And I also want to thank you for helping me create what has been called the most beautiful and spectacular website on the internet. You can find that at duncantrussell.com. My website is so incredible that from time to time, orbs and spheres and alien entities will appear around your computer just so they could catch one sweet, beautiful glimpse of my Squarespace website, which I use every week anytime I upload an episode of the DTFH. Squarespace, it empowers millions of dreamers, makers, and doers by providing them with the tools they need to bring their creative ideas to life. It's perfect for people who are ready to make their ideas a reality and want their ideas to stand out, like my incredible zinger of a profoundly powerful supernova-style website. Squarespace, they're wonderful. If you want to dive in and just make a website quickly, you could do that with their mix and match templates, but also you can go as deep as you need to, just depending on what you're trying to do. You don't have to make a Squarespace for business like my friend who sells her stinky socks online. You can make a Squarespace purely for art, as a tribute to honor one of your friend's mothers, or to create some kind of stunning and mysterious thing that maybe will make your friends think that you might be in the CIA. It's all up to you, but just to let you know, I might be in the CIA.com is available, and you can buy that at squarespace.com. It's simple. There's no hidden fees or price hikes. You just jump in and grab your domain. They've got awesome analytics, and if you want to do email marketing, you can use their powerful email content that matches your website to send out emails to your clients and to your fans. Head over to squarespace.com/Duncan for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use the offer code Duncan to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. Again, head to squarespace.com/Duncan for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use offer code Duncan to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or a domain. Thank you, Squarespace. I really love you. Hallelujah. Thank you so much for going through that with me.
No problem. And yeah, I just feel like every few weeks I'm like, is my period starting? Do I need to do ayahuasca? Do I have situational depression?
Yeah.
It's a challenging time for someone who has never been depressed.
Oh my God. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's, I guess, the good thing about having been actually depressed is I'm sort of familiar with it, and I know how to work. I know how to be depressed, and that's bad because I'm so good. Cause my depression, usually it'll lift. Like I have a lot of techniques that seem to work.
Tell me.
Tell people you feel depressed. Mm. That's the first one. The cardinal sin of depression is keeping it to yourself. Mm. That's how I get in all kinds of problems with Aaron, because I'm really good at not acting depressed, which is a form of procrastination. Because the idea is, if I act like I'm not depressed, maybe it'll lift a little bit, and then no one will have to have been like burdened by that, you know. And it works sometimes. Sometimes that actually works. But if it doesn't work, then all of a sudden your partner is going to be like, what's wrong with you? When suddenly you're in like a paralyzed state on the bed or something. And then you have to, you know, and also not admitting it is a form of denial that like, it's just unhealthy. So then when you admit it to the people around you, usually they'll be like, oh, fuck, and they'll help. And you know what I mean? They'll like listen to you and they'll like suggest things or notice things you've been doing. But then for me, it's just, it's the obvious. It's so obvious and it's so annoying. Exercise. Mm. Get outside. Sunlight. Vitamin D. I mean, none of these things, if it progresses enough, I haven't been medicated since I was in college, but if it progresses enough, you have to get medicated. You don't want it to get to that place. So you just, you have to basically start doing the opposite of what it's telling you to do, you know?
Right. Like I'm like, I need to just, maybe I just need to lay down for 2 days.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Oh, you'll feel better. You just need to sleep for about, oh, I don't know, maybe 30 hours straight. Yeah. Which won't work. But also for me, it's like, if I'm getting depressed, then what I'll start doing is staying up late, surfing the internet and like playing video games, like just stupid shit to avoid reality. And then because I'm doing that, I'm not getting enough sleep. And then if I'm not getting enough sleep, I'm going to be grumpier and more depressed. That that's the problem, is it amplifies itself. Whereas like, if you just start, you know, I'm meditating, like I don't want to meditate right now because I'm a little depressed. So like, it's extra hard to meditate right now. It's the last thing I want to do, but that helps too. I don't think there's any quick fix, but there's a lot of little things you can do. The main
bet if we all had that mayonnaise jar that Timothy Leary had with like full of Harvard grade LSD, we'd feel good.
No, God, no.
I'm reading Ram Dass's book, and I just feel like the 60s, it just felt like we'll never get to that. Like the stories he tells are so insane. Like, oh yeah, then I took my plane to get cheaper gas in Mexico. We got in the Cessna and then went back to the hotel we were renting for the summer so that we could all do LSD. And then, you know, when we landed at the airport, we just kind of put the gas in those little lockers at the airport and, you know, hid the LSD on our bodies. It's just like, what world is this?
Yeah.
It just seems so free.
Fearless.
Fearless.
A lot less fear. Now, But you know, I think the problem with memoirs is that you're hearing a side of things that sometimes is in someone's rearview mirror.
Right.
You know, I don't know what his experience was, but I do know that some of Tim Leary's kids had, I wonder what they would say about that kind, because I, you know, as a father, when I know, and I know what Tim Leary was doing and that kind of wild hippie life that a lot of people were living with their kids, mm-hmm. and it was very utopian. Mm-hmm. But also I think it was kind of irresponsible in the most extreme way and indulgent, mm-hmm. you know, cause like, I think that kids need us to be stable, mm-hmm. as much as we can, authentically stable, you know, but stable. Meaning like, I don't know that Forrest needs to see what daddy's like on 600 micrograms of acid emerging from some orgy. You know, I don't know. On the other hand, you know, maybe that's a good way to be or something. In your parenting, do you feel like there's something in you that makes you want to be kind of square?
Oh yeah. It sucks.
Yeah. Same. Like,
I have so much fear now, and I was never a fearful person. I kind of lived my whole life kind of, I probably would have gone with Ram Dass and like hid stuff in a locker and, you know, carried drugs on me past a border. Like, I don't, you know, if it felt like, oh, we can get away with this, like, but now, I mean, your life is like full of this fear that I don't think people really warn you about.
Yeah, no, I don't think they could. I mean, they could try. They warn you by the, when you look in the faces of parents. It's all there. But
I feel like I cut you off because you were talking about how to get out of depression.
No,
but it
I love
seem
the way
like
you cut.
Drugs would help.
No, I mean that's the dream. Is that and apparently like some drugs do help. Psilocybin can help, and ketamine can help, and LSD I guess could help, especially with therapy. But having like in my depressed periods, when I've gotten high on acid, a lot of times it doesn't help. Mm-hmm. And it just is a really rotten experience that on the other end, I'm still depressed. But now I also had a shitty acid trip to go along with it. I mean, I don't want to roll the dice. Again, when I was a kid, it was like, who cares? I don't think I even knew I was depressed until like college, when I was having suicidal ideations and went to a therapist and they're like, you're fucking depressed. But I don't think I knew what was happening to me, but I don't think there's a quick fix. I know. I think, but don't you think, to get back to the idea of the sort of
lore of the memoir,
and the stories of the '60s, that really, to me, what's amazing about Ram Dass and is the adventurous quality, you know, like they were really open to not just experimenting with psychedelics, but their approach to life was so beautifully experimental and so beautifully adventurous that it's inspiring. Drugs were just a part of that, you know? And when I watch you, your Instagram, it seems like y'all are very adventurous. You're always going on these wild trips. You're living in some, it seems like it's a commune or something.
I mean, we tried to do some communal living and I realized that it's just really hard for me. I'm not into it. Like, you know, it's like every day you're sharing a bathroom with seven people. Like I can't do that. You know,
I need to know more about this. What initiated this decision?
Well, what initiated it was that, you know, there's COVID. And so there was another family, the woman's an epidemiologist and she has three kids and they were kind of quarantined on this property in Northern California that Moshe's grandfather built like, you know, a long, long time ago. And so we went up there too. And then the communal space was from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. in the A-frame house. And then they would sleep in a trailer with their three kids and we would sleep in the house at night. But, you know, every morning the kids would come in and start talking and we'd wake up and have to come downstairs and, you know, and it was just Moshe like kept arguing with the children. And it was like, and then I realized too, like, I waited a really long time to have a kid and I think I'm really happy with one kid and like, I like my kid, but I don't like kids.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that I've kind of just realized, you know, like I'm not like one of those people who wants to hold your baby. Like it just makes my arm hurt, you know, like I'm not like, oh, give me that thing. I know Erin's the opposite, you know, like she's like loves babies. And I think that's like such a beautiful quality. And it's also a talent and a gift, but like, you know, I feel like I have love and I have so much love for my child, but that doesn't mean that now I just like being around other people's annoying children.
I mean, how much experience have you had being with other children other than this communal experience? I mean, is it possible like Moshe's arguing with these kids and you're like, I don't want to be around these kids. Is it possible that just y'all just weren't vibing with this other family?
I mean, that could be, yeah, I'm sure. I mean, but it's like, there were three of them.
Three families.
Like, no, three kids. But, you know, like one of the kids was like, and then they also like teach your kid really bad things. Like, you know, like the kid would just like walk out on the deck and pee. And so then like my kid would start doing that. And then it's like, yeah, like I think when you go out into the woods, kids, they can start to like go a little feral or something.
You know what? I got to just admit when I went, what? I was just thinking how in the country, vacation rental that we still have, I was just on the deck peeing.
And I felt so liberated.
It feels great. It's so cool. It's like, but yeah, I mean, I think what you're describing is really incredibly intimate and potentially catastrophic. Like, you know, when I think of the communal living situation that Ram Dass was doing, and it was sort of centered around a religion, like a tradition. There was,
and he would go from like communal living situation to communal living situation. He's like, I paid the bills and watched Tim's kids, and Tim would, you know, everyone had like their kind of you know, chores and place and things they did.
Yes.
But it's funny, when I got there, they were like, yeah, this other family who came with us for a week, because we were there for like 2 months. The mom was like, she just would check out every night at 6 p.m. And then I was like, ding, 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 ding. So like, every night at 6, I was like, I'm going to go into our trailer, because we each had our own trailer that we could kind of escape to. But yeah, I really needed that. And there is something wonderful about like having people pick up the slack and having someone else do the dishes, and every other night you have to cook. Like, it's kind of crazy that like every night someone has to make dinner, you know? And if you're just a plain family living by yourselves, which most of us are, or just a person, it's like, it's mind boggling to me that we have to like, it just becomes so boring, I guess. Like, okay, let's cook dinner now. Like, let's start thinking every night at 4 o'clock what we're going to cook for dinner. Like,
right.
When I was single, I would just eat Cheerios at night and, you know, do my thing.
But y'all are in LA. You could just order.
No, of course, sushi. Of course. I mean, you can't do that in the woods, obviously. But
oh, you're saying the woods, right. So, okay. So this is this is really, okay. This helps me understand that what was happening with you. I was so confused about what was going on.
Duncan, have you never heard that people make their Instagram lives seem really fun and exciting?
What? I thought everyone's very honest about that. I thought everybody was very honest. No, it didn't. I don't think that you were projecting. Your Instagram is the best because it's so honest. And I think you would be surprised at how beneficial that is for all of us who are going through varying weird things during this pandemic. You know, a lot of people look up to you, and to see like some of the images of like piles of clothes or chaos. And, you know, we're like, okay, great. This isn't just me. This is happening across the board. So I think there's something cool about it, but the thing didn't necessarily seem pleasant to me. I mean, the idea of living communally doesn't even strike me as good as in the fantasy version of it. I'm already miserable, much less the actual thing itself. But when I have had those experiences, I've noticed how wonderful it is to have a community around you, not just because they're going to cook and stuff, but like emotionally, you know what I mean? Like if it's a big enough community, you feel kind of held to some degree by them. And, you know, especially if there's more than just, we're going to live together. Like if there's some kind of, you know, something that everyone's connecting on.
Yeah. Trying to not get COVID.
Right.
That's our religion. But yeah,
that was more like you were more in a Walking Dead situation than what you would call a commune.
Like, well, I wanted my kid to like socialize with people, you know. It's like, that's something that is obvious. Obviously it's important to listen to scientists, and it's important to not get COVID, but it's also important to, like, you know, kids' brains need to like be inspired and like activated by other children their own age. And it's like, we can't just like keep everyone separate. But wait, when you were just talking about Instagram, it made me realize like there's such this like explosion of like mainly women, like influencer type. Everyone wants to be an influencer. Like, girls I know are now like telling you how to eat and telling you how to act, and all these influencer, like this resurgence or this like new career that's like people are just like, I'm going to tell you how to act and look how great my life is. And it's like, yeah. This is all happening during like a time when we're all kind of privately depressed. It just is like such a lie, obviously, you know, like, why do you know what's going on and how I should act and what I should eat. And are you really eating like that? The whole thing. So I think I just try to be honest and like, you know, show the chaos.
Yeah. I mean, thank God, you know, this is, I hopefully pull this off because I think it's better for people to hear that. Yeah. Right now it's hard to be married and right now it's hard to live with people. And right now,
I mean, talk about being single. No one's touching you. I mean, I know people are getting out now and the vaccines, the rollout is good and, you know, thank God. But yeah, it's like my single friends are like, I haven't been touched. It's like that just sounds so hard.
Oh my God. Yeah. That sounds like it. I don't know what I would have. I do know what I would have done. I've thought about if I were single during the pandemic, I think I would have just
gotten a cat.
No, I would have resumed. I would have resumed ketamine addiction.
Oh like my God, that's awful.
I think I would have just bought thousands and thousands of dollars worth of ketamine, and bought a lot of weird synthesizers. And I think I just would have numbed.
Don't tell your followers that. That is a bad idea.
I don't mean it. That's a good thing. I mean, like, it would
I've been around you when you've been on that kind of thing. Like, I just remember you, like, flushing things down a toilet. Like, that never ends well.
No, I can't. It's terrible. I mean, there's no way. There's just no way out. That's the problem.
You said avoid white powders.
Well, that's before I think I'd done ketamine. And then was like, this is not a white powder to avoid. This is the best thing ever. And of course, that's what I said because I was getting addicted to it. That's what everybody says when they get addicted to something. But yeah, I mean, I that's why I feel lucky to have the inconvenience and the burden and the stress and the anxiety and the claustrophobia of having kids and being married right now, because it doesn't allow the same level of profound selfishness that you can achieve when you're single. I mean, just you can just maximize your selfishness. And I'm not saying like selfishness, like you're greedy or something. I just mean self-absorption because you're just by yourself.
Well, these single people all better learn French or some new language or the saxophone or something.
Oh God. Yeah. That's the other thing is the pandemic achiever club. Where like, while all of us have been like, you know, dealing with our own demons, they're like, I've learned how to bake bread and I can read Sanskrit. It's like, fuck you.
The pandemic achievement club.
Yeah. I mean, congratulations to any of y'all who got abs and did the thing. And like, but even then I think what you're commenting on in Instagram, there's a kind of frantic quality to it. It's like, when you're watching someone do pull-ups in a prison movie, you know, it's like, I'm doing it. But it's like, yeah, but you're still just like all of us, you know, having to come to terms with this reality of that, you know, society isn't stable in the way we thought it was. And that's really scary.
Yes. And then also with Instagram, I think kind of one of the lower depths of misery to me is like reading your refreshing your page, reading your comments. Like that's something that like, that would be, because I saw a girl doing that once in line. Like I was in line for something and I saw someone doing that. And I was like, that is so sad. And then I was like, oh, I do that. And, you know, it's like, that's something you wouldn't want someone to see you doing, right? Like, that's something you kind of like move your phone to kind of privately because it's a private thing. And it's like a private thing in a gross way. And
yeah,
I would love to like get that part of my life out because people, you know, people are so mean and cruel. And then all of a sudden, all these like mean things are in your psyche. And why do you care what these people are purposely saying mean things to you? And
yeah. I don't know. Oh my God. Yeah.
Now I shouldn't have said that. Now everyone's going to be like, this woman sucks. Like I'll go to your page. I'll read the comments. They'll say how no women are funny. And especially her.
I really think that I have done a perma flea dip of my podcast for that thing that you used to were accosted by that. What happened is, you know, my friend Connor Abib taught me about this. He just said, if you're not careful, if you are a white guy with any kind of like voice in the world, then you're going to get these angry, like alt-right weirdos that just attach themselves to you. And I think via Instagram and via guests I've had on this show, they've left me. That was when I went on Instagram, realizing like, well, this sucks. People think it's because of you. It all started with you. You posted a picture of, oh God, what's her name? Oh my God. Divine. And
oh, yeah.
Trump. And it said something like vote them out. It was just, I saw it, just thought it was cool. I ripped it off your Instagram, posted it on my Instagram. I credited you, but I just thought it was cool. Instantly, a flood of people on my Instagram who are all Trump people. And it was really embarrassing and really like a come to Jesus moment for me, because I was like, oh fuck, I'm just like covered in these lice that have somehow gotten confused regarding my point of view on some things. And then I started posting pictures of like, you know, a kid getting a vaccine or Biden, you know, just pictures that I knew would upset them.
But are they bots?
No, they weren't bots. They were just a lot of like, you know, QAnon people, Trump people who had just decided that I was like one of them. And I think I've hopefully shaken most of them off. Like there might be a few people clinging there, but yeah. So I don't think that's going to happen this time, hopefully.
I got one. I was going to read you this. I looked at my, every time I look at my Instagram, there's just like something terrible here. Here's one that someone said yesterday. I posted a picture. Eek. You look like a used tampon someone thought they'd get another day out of.
Oh my God.
like the level of hatred from, I guess it's, I'm sure it's mostly men, right? Oh, his skank hunt. That's his name. But it's just like, I just feel like as a woman, yeah, it's just constant, but it's not real. So I mean, yeah, maybe I did look bad, but it's just like, it's just not a real thing that we should be concerned about.
I think there's something to be concerned about. I don't think it's a danger, but for me, like anytime I've gotten, you know, the level of hate that you can achieve online, it's more thinking in terms of like, that's a person. Skank hunt is a person, right? And that's a person who has dehumanized you. If skank hunt had understood that just because you have like some kind of fame or success doesn't change the reality that you can feel, and that you are just as confused as anybody else and just as wanting to be happy as anybody else, I don't think they would do that. But I think something about the way we interact with each other online creates this like possibility of just completely dehumanizing a person. And then in that, you becoming like hyper aggressive like that. And then, because they don't think they're important. That's the main thing. Obviously, skank hunt, when skank hunt at night is thinking about himself, he's not thinking like, I'm a really remarkable person. You know, a lot of people want to hear what I have to say. And, you know, I really want to help the world. He just is lost in a dreamy state of like, I don't mean anything to anybody. You know, I'm nothing to nobody.
I'm sure on when I was on Chelsea Lately, I said really mean things about people. You know, that was
you
kind
did.
Of the job.
Yeah, and I mean, yeah.
Hopefully there's like some kind of, I don't know, I hopefully as all of this, you know, Me Too is happening and you know, I feel like Black Lives Matter and I feel like maybe there could be this like 60s level of consciousness level raising that could happen among everybody and we could all start realizing that our actions.
Yeah.
But I don't know. That's probably not going to happen. Meanwhile, QAnon is like happening. So
it's happening to you, though. I mean, you're different now, and for the better. It's, you know, when we were coming up in comedy, that style of comedy that Chelsea Handler was like one of the like figureheads of, which was like viciously attacking famous people. The idea, I guess, being that if you're famous, if you're a celebrity, you've got it so good. Then, you know, getting roasted, it doesn't really hurt you. It's, if anything, it adds to your fame, but it's, it's all for fun anyway. Right. And, so yeah, that was the idea. And it wasn't just Chelsea Lately. It was, think of all the different shows that popped up, like at least the roasts that you're on, the person's right there and gets to respond. And it's cool because they signed up for it. It's consensual.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the other stuff that when we were doing the Lavender Hour, I'm sure many times I can't even remember, I would say shitty things about a famous person, never imagining they would even notice me, much less like feel hurt by something I had to say.
Yes. Skank Hunt's probably thrilled that I just mentioned him.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Skank Hunt was probably like, about to eat rat poison or something. And it's like, you know what? Maybe I should keep saying shitty things to people online. But yeah, I don't know. I think there is a collective humanization happening.
And you isn't know, that how you create good karma is like in the moment when you're about to send something or say something, you decide not to. And it's like in that tiny little moment is where you can start making differences in your lives or even like checking your at replies. Yeah. It makes you feel bad. But like in that moment, you can be like, okay, I have the strength to not do this. I have the strength to not like pick whatever that thing is that's like not a positive thing for you.
Oh, yeah. That moment is so interesting. That's like, that's the bundled up sum total of all your karma is in that moment. And that's in meditation that you can start making that moment longer and longer and longer. So you have more time with that thing that is so interesting. It's just an impulse. It's not much at all. Like the thing that keeps you doing what you do, if you really look at it, it's hardly anything. That's what's fascinating about it. The thing where you send the shitty email or say the shitty thing or get revenge or whatever. Those preceding moments, it's like the impulse just isn't even that strong. Do you know what I mean? Like it's not.
Talk about expanding the moment. How do you expand that moment? You make one decision to not do something that's hurtful and don't put the barb at the end of your sentence and don't check your, you just kind of try to keep doing things that will expand it.
Well, the answer is ketamine, Natasha. You see, no, I'm just kidding.
Hey, I'll try it, but I need to make sure I have a babysitter.
Oh no! I mean, I think therapeutically it's great, but not the way I was doing it. So there's there's all kinds of ways that they teach that it could be done. Where generally the practice of meditation, watching your breath, familiarizing yourself with the moment to moment you, you know, like. That can be enough. When I'm meditating every day and the moment pops up that normally I wouldn't even notice, and that moment is in between me not being an asshole and me being an asshole, I'll notice, oh, wait, this is there's that thing. Oh, that's not real. I don't think that's real. Oh, well, what happens if I just don't do it? And then then you don't do it and your whole machine gets fucked up. I mean, that's what's so cool is if your entire experience has been habitual and then you disrupt it, what world are you in the moment after you've disrupted a thing you've been doing for your whole life? I mean, that's a different world. It's like a different universe.
And it's not just your whole life. It's like with technology now, like I'm so much more addicted to my phone than I was a year ago. And sometimes I'll just like, right after I've exhausted every single tab and every single thing, yeah. I pick it up in like I'll get, you know, drink one sip of water and then pick it up again. And it's like that habitual nature, like there's nothing there for me. Like, what do I, it's like more pandemic porn or more, what do people think and of me and of what I said? And, you know, what else can I look at that might give me, I think you said like mainlining the news or, you know, yeah. It's like none of that is, I mean, obviously you want to be informed, but I do feel like we're kind of being wired to be so addicted to it. So maybe even just trying to start with the phone in terms of, for me, in terms of like creating better karma in my life and less depression, I think that could really help me.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I mean, yeah, definitely for everybody. Have you heard about these, what are they? I think they're called serotonin fasts or dopamine fasts. I can't remember which neurotransmitter, but have you heard of this? Like, it's like basically you turn your phone off, but it's not just that. You reduce your sensory input for 24 hours to almost nothing. So it's almost like you're meditating, but it's not just that you're not looking at your phone. You're not looking at bright colors. You're not doing it. Yeah. You're just like, there's no activation of that part of your brain for some amount of time. And then when you go back into the world, you don't, it's like, it's, I guess it's the same thing they say about like a lot of people's palates have been corrupted by sugar. And like, we've become accustomed to very powerful tastes. But if you start eating food that's a little more bland over time, that food will start tasting as good as an Oreo or whatever. And so the phone is like sugar for the brain. And so if you sort of go off of that constant high, then going outside and walking will seem as exciting. Theoretically, I haven't done this, but you know, suddenly when you're just doing things that used to be in the 80s called life, you know, I used to get excited about books. I would buy a book as a kid and be like, holy shit, I've got a new book. Because there wasn't a phone to go into. There wasn't anything but the book.
Are you able to get into a book now? Have you found that you can still do that?
Audiobooks. I can do audiobooks. The reading part of my brain sadly seems to have been somewhat warped or something. Like, but audiobooks. I consume a lot of books by listening to them when I go like jogging or go up in the woods or something, or just, yeah. What about you?
No, everything is a struggle. I'm struggling. Yeah. But I have some kind of like situation. Wait, Duncan, sorry. I need to get my charger.
Yeah, sure. No problem. I'll hit pause on this. Look, I think that all of us are doing really good considering what we're dealing with. Also, you're a comic. You're a touring comedian. Ever since I've known you, that's your life. This rhythm of doing shows and writing jokes for the shows and doing shows.
But I'm out of that rhythm.
Exactly. Like
we've all been in a cocoon.
Yes. We don't, like, the thing that for us was more than just a job, but like almost like a form of spirituality or way to check in with the world, or the real checking of the phone, you know, like, was getting on stage and trying a joke in front of a crowd of people and their instant reaction. That was the real thing. And we don't have that right now. And I think a lot of performers, it's our nature to be in denial or something, or, and just forget, like, oh yeah, we haven't been able to perform for a year now responsibly. And that's fucked up. Like I always thought comedy would be that, like, when's comedy going to go away? We'll always be able to go and do shows, but that got vanquished for a while.
That was the one thing every comedian always said.
Yeah, there'll always be a way to do shows and then gone. But how are you doing with that? Have you been working on any new jokes or
no?
Like, no joke writing at all?
I mean, I haven't. I feel like consumed. I feel consumed by like keeping myself and my family safe. So I feel like I have to like read every article and stress about every strategy and like, you know, like can like I really wanted my child. That's why we were, you know, that's how I found myself living in a commune. Because I wanted her to be able to socialize, you know, and for her development. So, you know, I just feel like I haven't really, and maybe it's just being a woman or maybe I worry too much, but I do feel like a lot of my time and energy is spent in like managing, you know, my fear and making good decisions. Cause every decision, even if you like decide to go get your hair cut, it's like you could maybe die, you know? So like being a new mother, that's so much, you know, cause on top of that, you're just like a new mom. So you don't really know.
We just had a off record moment. Natasha and I are getting caught up and we're both talking about, we both feel depressed. And I was just telling her, you know, how I just got in a rotten fight with Aaron yesterday and how horrible it is to watch, like our Forrest started, you know, was very upset and crying. And you were telling me you had.
Yeah, that today we got into a fight and then the kid was like, can you turn the music on? And like, it wasn't even a fight. It was just like, you know, it was not nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I loved what you said, because you said it's not just like getting into the fight. It's making sure that they see you make up. And I think that if I could start remembering that, that would really in every way.
Yeah. It's the resolution. That's what Trudy Goodman told me. And I, you know, I love that. And, but, you know, it's never going to like now, like watching your child get upset because you're fighting with their mother or their mother's fighting with you. I'm never going to get that out of my head. And if I feel so guilty about it, but people fight. I mean, people fight, people who have conflict, people don't get along all the time. And trying to, because Aaron and I actually talked about it. We talked about, should we have our fights in private?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Maybe that would be better.
Like, yeah.
Just never fight in front of the kid.
Yeah.
My parents, you know, physically fought in front of me, and that was really terrible. And I would never, I hope I would never get in. I mean, obviously I'm not, would never be in that situation. Like that was my life's goal, is to never be in that situation, you know? So,
yeah.
So when I picked someone, I knew we had like a great rapport in that way, but you know, it's just like, obviously with the circumstances of life, you know, it's very hard to not ever raise your voice at someone from like 8 a.m. and 6 p.m.
Yeah.
or 8 p.m.
Yeah. It's hard. And it's, yeah. Well, you know,
trying to make it fun and resolving it when there was an issue is like so important.
Yes. And honestly resolving it. And if it's not resolved, then it's not, then don't fake resolve it. I mean, the idea, I think the idea is, well, what we decided was we shouldn't fight in private, because then it's a lot. It's the kids aren't going to learn that this is a normal thing. And so if, when they're getting angry with each other, when they're fighting, they'll think something's gone wrong. There's a malfunction here. People don't fight, but,
right.
You know, so, you know, this is one of the things I like about being married and having kids, is it really does force a resolution. It forces you to work through a thing because you've worked so hard to be married. You work so hard to harmonize with a person, and it is work, good work, but work. And so there's a lot at stake that in maybe a less, you know, in a non-child related relationship, you might be like, no, I don't have time for this bullshit. This, you know, and then you get to like go and repeat the cycle over and over again of getting in relationship and out and over and over and over. So it forces a resolution. There's a evolution that happens too. But yeah, I mean, we, you know, it's conflict resolution is what the whole world needs to learn. You know, that's what we have to, peaceful conflict resolution. Because my parents, depending on which marriage, my mom mostly after my dad had their fights in private, but
you don't think that was good. Oh, because your mom's a therapist, so that was probably a tactic on her part.
I know. I think that what happened is that my mom felt ashamed that she had been in so many marriages, and so she didn't want me to see them not working again. She felt guilty or something, you know? Yeah, no, I don't think it was a therapist decision. I think it was just she felt guilty. Yeah.
Yeah, it's hard. And I think that's why I'm so happy for my child, because I feel like her vision of what it is to be a woman and be able to like never need a man, if you don't, you know, even just like coinciding with all the egg freezing and the technology that's happening so women can have babies later. I just think it's really exciting for women to like, you know, hopefully create a matriarchy.
Yeah. I mean, look, this is something Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche said, which I refer to when I'm in my like really dark, selfish moments. Whatever the ism may be, or archy in this case, matriarchy, patriarchy, communism, socialism, libertarianism, whatever the thing may be. If you really want to create positive change in society, figure out a way to create harmony within your family. That's it. That's it. And that transcends class. That transcends capital. That transcends everything. Because it's like fire, right? It's an elemental thing. We've always done this as long as there's been people. And it's probably always been hard. And it's always been confusing. And so, you know, for me, anytime Aaron and I do not just resolve a disagreement that we're having, but really get honest with each other. You know, like when I told her, like, I've been lying to you. I haven't wanted to tell you I'm fucking depressed right now. I didn't want to like deal with it myself. And I don't want to be that kind of parent, like, oh, daddy's in a mood, that thing, you know, mentally ill parent. But it's just something I've had to deal with my whole life.
How do you know if it goes away or if you need medication?
Or do you need that's the question of the hour. But
because obviously alcohol can help a little bit, you know, just like if you don't have, you know, alcohol addiction, but then it's like it becomes, oh, you know, at least I can always soothe my nerves if I need to, but then.
Yeah, you know. I can't. Booze is like, it's good that we've said it because there are certain things just immediately go off the table for me because I do have a regimen when I'm finally coming to terms with the fact that I'm fucking depressed. Number one, I'm annoyed because I thought I'd made it through the winter without getting, every winter I get a little depressed, every winter. And I really was telling a friend of mine, it didn't happen to me this year. And then, fuck, here it is again. So that's annoying because I was feeling this weird pride of like, wow, I didn't go fucking blue this winter. But yeah, so then, booze off the table. That doesn't work for me.
You don't drink when you're depressed.
I can't. It's a depressant.
Right.
So if I drink, I'm going to.
You can't even have like a glass of wine at dinner.
No. I mean, I could, but it fucks with my sleep. So, and for me, like all of it seems to be really tied into like sleep. So what I'll do is I won't get enough sleep. And then if I can pull off not getting enough sleep, then maybe I'll get manic, which will make me feel creative, but it's still, I'm still going to put, that's putting off the depression. So it's just like, okay. I mean, it helped so much just to say it out loud. And then now she knows it. And it's like, oh yeah, we could deal with this together. It's something we could totally deal with. I've dealt with it before. I know what to do. I'm like, get enough sleep, drink enough water, exercise, and stay fucking honest. And yeah, unfortunately, I can't get drunk or drink until it's like truly resolved. And even then, who knows? I mean, booze is like, ugh.
Oh, so you're anti-alcohol right now?
No, I love booze. I love all drugs. I love to get high, but the repercussions for a person who gets depressed of alcohol mm-hmm. are pretty severe. Like, hangovers suck anyway, but try a hangover when you're depressed. It's like, mm-hmm. you know, it's like the devil's peanut butter and jelly. It's like the two go hand in hand, you know? But what about you? I mean, I know you don't, you haven't experienced it before, but you feel like you've got the tendrils of it or something. I mean, what are you doing to work with it?
Oh, I don't, nothing. I mean, I'm just like, I'm kind of in torpor.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
Well, but I'm willing. This is why maybe I'm willing to try. I want to start doing something about it, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's a
empowering things, you know, things that aren't based in fear all the time, but like, what can I do to like feel creatively inspired, and how can I have more of my intake be things that are like edifying for me?
Right.
And so, and intake also like social, like walking down the street and running into someone. And, you know, like I took a walk the other day and ended up seeing like three or four comedians, and it was so nice to like just talk to people outside. Yes. Like it feels so novel.
Yeah.
I think that we need that.
Yes. That we, God, what happened? It's
novelty and physical activity. And those are the two things that make your brain feel good. And like, I'm not getting those things, you know, everything's the same.
Right. Yep. Groundhog's Day. Yeah. Yeah. It's the worst. I know what you mean. Right. And then the phone only fucks it up that much more, because, you know, that's the other thing is like, as a form of self-medicating, when you're getting depressed, you will go to anything. And if you're feeling depressed, of course you're going to go into your phone, because it's helping you get some serotonin or dopamine in there, which is what's lacking when you're depressed. So it makes total sense, now that I think about it, why I've been so particularly addicted to Hearthstone lately, which is like, it's like the CIA just invented this game that just blasts the happy juice out of your brain. But it's like, as it's happening, you know, it's artificial. It's not the real thing. But this is, you know, this is why like addiction springs up with depression. They go hand in hand, because you're trying to self-medicate. You want to get better naturally. You don't want to be depressed. You're trying to get it better. And so the easy fixes are always drugs or booze or something like that. That's easy, but usually it doesn't work. God, imagine if booze treated depression. Do you know how we would be in the happiest, the planet would be just filled with people singing to the hills, because you know what I mean? It would work. It doesn't work. We'd be in the Sound of Music everywhere all day long. Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, please.
Duncan, I want to ask you a question. Would you secretly like to have deep fakes made of you?
Hell no. Do you want deep fakes made of you?
No, but I just think you're someone who I was thinking maybe it's I don't know. I just thought it'd be funny.
No, my God, no. I mean, it's an inevitability for all of us. I'm sure you already have deepfakes made of you in the recesses of the internet. It's an inevitability that we're all going to have to live with. you know, that, but no, I don't want deepfakes made. Deepfakes are, you know, in Game of Thrones, when everyone's like, winter is coming, you know, they're all fighting each other. That's deepfakes. Like whatever the fucking particular thing you're upset about, or whoever you're at war with online, or whatever hill you're currently dying on, just forget it. It's the deepfakes are going to like completely unravel society as we know it.
How do you learn how to make a deepfake?
That's the thing, is like, anytime I've looked it up, it seems super complex, you know, because obviously as a comedian, like, you know, I'm like, oh, cool, I'm going to make a deep fake of Brendan. I don't know how many times I've wanted to like make a deep fake of Walsh. And then I go and look at, I'm not spending 20 hours on this, you know, project.
But I've known you when you've learned like HTML code, like you're good at that. Like you actually have a capacity for it. So I bet you could learn how to do it.
Oh no, it's too late. It's too late. The terrifying thing about deepfakes is that we're already in our phones. We associate our phones with reality. And there's a real possibility that at some point someone could intercept our phones and do deepfakes of every single person we know. So we wouldn't even know that we weren't talking with our friends. You know, we would
that happen all at once?
Well, yeah. I mean, not now. I'm saying in 10, 20 years, that's going to be a weapon, which is all of a sudden everyone is going to get, you know, FaceTimes or calls from their friends, and their friends are going to like say scary things to them, or say they need money, or, you know, threaten them, or, and it's going to create disruption. It's like it's a disrupting, like.
You said it would affect our parents more though.
Well, no,
because they'll be like thinking that we're at, they won't understand how it works, or can't you have like a code word or something?
Yeah, that's what I was telling you. Yeah, we're going to have to all have code words, which is like, if I ever call you, Natasha, and I'm like, listen, I don't have much time. Please, I'll explain later. I need an Amazon gift card.
I would give it to you.
I know you would. But that's why you have to be like, okay, what's the word we came up with?
And would I say, it's really hard to know, because it would be so weird if you were to FaceTime me out of the blue.
Yeah.
You know, and then to ask me for money.
It's an emergency. I'm sorry for FaceTiming you. I could only, you know, whatever the fuck, I've already given them the words. They won't even have to deep fake that part.
And then I would get the Amazon card for you. And yeah, I guess it's like a new scam.
I feel like somewhere in the process of getting an Amazon card for me, you would be like, somebody would be like, no, don't do that. That part we don't have to worry about. I mean, the real implication of deepfakes is just, it fits into simulation theory, because the real question we have to ask ourselves is, are we actually some kind of cosmic deepfake? Like, is this a higher technology emulating a previous Natasha and a previous Duncan that don't exist anymore? Have we already been digitized, and are they just, you know,
part of the multiverse?
Yeah. That's the scary thing. Look, this was a wonderful time I had chatting with you. I appreciate all your time. And also I on behalf of all the depressed people of the planet, we thank you for being honest that you're feeling it too, because we all benefit from just, that's for all my depressed fans. You know what I'm talking about. You got to say it out loud. That's the first step, you know? So it's good that you're saying it out loud. And also it's good that you're giving all the people who feel like they're beyond depression, or that it's not something that could get them, when they hear you say it, it's like, I think it's quite liberating, because we live in the age of depression right now. It makes sense that you feel like that.
Well, thank you. And it's been great talking to you.
It's great catching up with you. Thank you so much for your time. You've got a show coming up, don't you, with Todd Barry? What is that?
That's on March 26th. I don't know if this is going to air before then.
It will.
So, yeah, we're doing a Zoom comedy show.
Wow.
I've done one.
Brave.
And it was great, but I feel like it might be like my first time on stage, like my first time on stage, I like totally crushed and like, I was like, I mean, it felt like I was on drugs and it was like waves of laughter. Like I could feel the laughter. And then like my second time on stage, I had like this huge head and I was like going to tell them about my next performance at this open mic. Cause they're going to want to come, you know, and I was just, it was like a total bomb. You know, I was like started doing crowd work. I told some guy he smelled, like the whole bar kind of turned on me. You know, I went home and like laid in bed and like was just like, oh, this is going to take a long time. You know, like so anyway, Zoom comedy, am I excited about it? Oh, it's mostly crowd work though. So it's going to be like Todd making fun of people probably. And I mean, he's like so funny with his crowd work. So I'm just doing it, to just watch him do that for an hour and a half.
You're going to do great. What a courageous thing. You're talking about,
Have you tried to do comedy on Zoom?
Hell no.
That's the new forum for us, you know,
I would smuggle acid into Mexico with Ram Dass before I would do comedy on Zoom.
So, oh no. Wait,
you are fearless.
Stop
and you
it.
Are
Todd no. will never let me cancel. I can't just be like, hey, I can't. It's like on our birthday.
No, the world needs
the show.
I don't
want to do it.
Do the show. I'm going to buy a ticket.
No.
I'm just kidding.
No, please come to my show.
Thank you.
Duncan, you're not invited though.
Okay, I won't come. Guys, come to this show. Thank you, Natasha. I will put all the links to your wonderful podcast and anything else you want. Thanks for your, I really appreciate it. It's great catching up.
Okay, bye.
A booming thank you to the brilliant Natasha Leggero for coming on the DTFH, and much thanks to Fields, Athletic Greens, and Squarespace for supporting this episode of the DTFH. An eternal thank you to my family over at patreon.com/DTFH, and thank you to you for listening. I really do love you, and thank you for giving me the coolest job of all time. I love you. I hope you have a great weekend, and I'll see you soon. Until next time, Hare Krishna.